You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine. It's 10 minutes past 7 o'clock on this Wednesday morning, July the 25th. Take two aspirins and call me in the morning. Do you always follow your doctor's orders? Do you always understand them? Well, a new study from Northwestern University says a low health literacy, the inability to understand medical information or instructions from a doctor, is life-threatening. The study of patients 65 years old and older found those who couldn't understand basic written medical instructions were much more likely to die within 6 years than those who had no problems grasping the information. We'll talk about this study and what can be done to improve communication between doctors and patients and how to improve health literacy. And we'll welcome your thoughts and questions for our guest. 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. In Madison, 263-1890, 263-1890. Or send an email to talk@wpr.org. Please include your first name and your community with your email. Our guest is Michael Wolfe, assistant professor at the Institute for Healthcare Studies at Northwestern University, where he also directs the Health Literacy and Learning Program. He co-authored this recently published study on health literacy, and he joins us by telephone. Good morning.
Hello, Joy. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks a lot for being with us. Now, tell us a little bit more about this study. What did you do?
Well, we interviewed about 3,200 adults over the age of 65 who were newly enrolled in a Medicare managed care plan back in 1997. And we followed this cohort of individuals for approximately 6.5 years and looked at whether their health literacy skills measured at that initial interview was related to mortality during that time.
Yeah. And when we're talking health literacy skills, are these people who just plain can't read or what?
Well, definitely not just being able to read. Health literacy is a somewhat complex term, but it really refers to the set of skills that an individual would need to process, understand, and act on health information. And it is very much related to your general literacy ability, your ability to kind of read and navigate through prose and document text, and to also do some basic numeracy skills like the reading comprehension test that we gave them that assesses their health literacy skills does everything from having them navigate a Medicaid application and basically kind of fill in some words that are omitted, to also asking some simple questions like, if you had a prescription medication and you had to take it every 6 hours, you took the first dose at 7 in the morning, when would you take it again? So these are some basic math skills you need in the context of health.
Yeah. So what did you find?
Well, we found that individuals that, through the assessment that we use, that were deemed as having inadequate health literacy skills, that those individuals had a significantly higher rate of both all-cause mortality and cardiovascular-related death during those 6.5 years. In fact, it kind of translated to having inadequate health literacy skills had about a 50% increase in mortality risk compared to those who had adequate literacy skills.
So what does that tell you?
Well, I think it tells us a lot that these are individuals that are likely having a more difficult time possibly getting information and knowing how to act on that information on what they should be doing to manage their health. And this is a group that we're very concerned with and trying to figure out how can we better improve how we give patients in the healthcare system information on what they need to be doing to promote their health, to manage the disease once they have a diagnosis, and to better engage and navigate the healthcare system, which is overly complex.
Yeah. Do we draw from this that it's only older people with this issue?
Well, what a lot of the studies, there's clearly almost 1,000 studies now that over the past 2 decades have kind of addressed this problem of limited health literacy skills. And we do know that the problem of limited health literacy is definitely more prominent in older populations, among those that are socioeconomically disadvantaged, racial ethnic minority groups, where you see educational disparities in general. So I wouldn't say that it's just an issue of older adults. Clearly, it's an issue for everybody with regards to how do you understand and act on your health care.
And this has nothing to do with doctors having notoriously bad handwriting.
Well, I mean, I think it...
or does it?
Well, you get it a larger problem, which is there was an Institute of Medicine report in 2004 that came out and really gave a definition to this issue, and kind of it was called a prescription to end confusion. So with that, it referred to health literacy as not just being a problem with an individual's skill level or ability to, you know, read and understand health information, but it was more often an issue that the healthcare system places great demands on patients, and oftentimes does not communicate in a manner that is clear and reflective of what the average reading and communication skills of average U.S. adult are. So whether or not a doctor writes in clear handwriting or communicates effectively, clarifies complex medical terms that a lot of the general lay population does not understand, I think that's a big problem, and we need to get them to write more clear, to communicate more in a way that everybody can understand.
Yeah. And things like, instead of saying your glucose level, say your blood sugar.
Sure. Yeah. Yes. So, you know, and a lot of times that, you know, there's a very complex vocabulary in medicine, and there are many opportunities where there are better terms like blood sugar instead of glucose that could be used. But also, even if you do have to raise a term, to clarify, to talk about it, to kind of have a better relationship with your patients, make sure that you are getting your information across, and to test to see if they understand, you know, to have them teach back is one of the things that's being promoted right now, to engage healthcare providers with their patients so they understand what patients aren't getting, what's coming across, what needs to be better clarified.
Mm-hmm.
We
are talking with Michael Wolf, an assistant professor at the Institute for Healthcare Studies at Northwestern University, co-author of a recently published study on health literacy, a study that found that people who had a difficult time understanding or reading medical information had a much higher risk of dying. And we are talking about what can be done about this. What can be done to improve doctor-patient communication? What do you think? 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, in Madison 263-1890. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. You're listening to the Ideas Network. I'm Joy Cardine. It's just about 19 minutes past 7 o'clock. Coming up after 8 o'clock, I'll welcome in the editor of the Progressive magazine, Matt Rothschild, who will talk about his new book, You Have No Rights, about how your rights have been violated since 9/11. That's coming up after 8. Right now, we're talking about the need for greater medical literacy with our guest, Michael Wolf, an assistant professor at the Institute for Healthcare Studies at Northwestern University, where he also directs the Health Literacy and Learning Program. He co-authored this recently published study on health literacy that found that an inability to follow your doctor's orders because you don't understand them, or you can't comprehend them properly, could lead to an early death. 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890. Any questions for our guest about this study? Any thoughts on how we can improve doctor-patient communication? Maybe you have some examples of how difficult it was for you to understand your doctor's orders. We can talk about that as well. Our first caller is June in Shawano. Hi, June, you're on the air.
Hi, Joy. I want to ask your guest about how involved pharmacists were in his study. In my own experience and in caring for my parents, I found that pharmacists were the most important ones to be able to talk about this, particularly side effects or medicines that did not go together, and how and when to take them.
Mm-hmm. Michael Wolff?
Well, our study didn't actually involve any healthcare providers, but I think that's a very wonderful point when we think about how to actually improve how we give patients and families information about, you know, whether it be about prescription drugs and how to take them properly and when to call your doctor if there's a problem or if there's a question. Pharmacists in particular have been very much involved with this problem of health literacy and trying to take on a role, and the American Pharmacists Association is very active in that with regards to, you know, trying to help providers do a better job of communicating in plain language, not dumbing down information, but getting information in plain language to patients and families about what you need to be doing on this information. Oftentimes we know there's many studies that show that when you get a new prescription medication, for instance, that your physician doesn't adequately counsel you on all the information you need. You get the prescription and you kind of leave the office with this piece of paper that has some Latin abbreviations on it, but you don't really know what you're supposed to be doing. And it's, you know, oftentimes the pharmacist could be very, very helpful at that point to explain this in clear terms and to go over it with you. So that's one of the things that is being explored, and I think a lot of pharmacists could be very much involved in interventions for that.
Yeah. Did your, did your study come up with some specific recommendations of things that might be done to help better educate low literacy patients?
Well, I think what this study in particular just that highlight. I think this study in particular is kind of the culmination of a lot of studies in general that have started to link together. That we know that patients with lower health literacy skills or more limited health literacy have problems understanding health information, are less likely to use preventative services, and oftentimes, like for instance in the case of cancer, have delayed diagnoses, so they show up with more advanced stages of disease because they didn't get screened in a timely fashion. We know that patients with inadequate literacy skills have worse self-management skills, which may, so once they have a disease, it's harder, their management of it, effective management, is not as strong. And then, so this study really shows that the culmination of all of this really leads to, a greater mortality risk. So our recommendations were that we need this to be on the agenda of, our national health agenda, to think about what can we be doing to mitigate the problem. And that's a tough question. So there's a lot of investigators and people around the country working on this. There's talks about using, how can we use multimedia tools, use the internet to develop better health materials, to work with healthcare providers and healthcare systems to make it easier to navigate your healthcare system, whether it be reading, dealing with what your health insurance benefits may be, to understanding what you need to do to manage your diabetes or how to properly take your prescription drugs. We're working right now with the American College of Physicians Foundation to develop better drug labels, which has been also of a big concern. So we really need to think how information is getting to patients and do a better job.
Yeah, I'm looking at an article that I think quotes your co-author, Dr. David Baker, saying, talking about maybe one answer is showing a movie instead of just trying to communicate it verbally, that the pictures might help the patient understand.
Mm-hmm. That's true. There's a growing amount of research from different fields, from psychology and education, that show that that people learn in different ways, and we know this from adult learning research that some people learn better through oral communication, and some people do better having visual aids, having pictures to kind of explain concepts. And when you have like a movie or like a multimedia little presentation that you can click on a computer, a lot mm-hmm. of doctors' offices now have electronic medical records, so there's actually like a computer screen in your exam room. For those that do, you could just click on a little icon and start showing a little video that kind of explains, this is what you need, this is the disease, or this is the screening test that we want you to engage in, this is why we want it, and helps people better understand why they need a colon cancer screening test, for instance, and helps them make decisions properly to act on it.
Fidel in Whitewater is with us now. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi, Joy. How you doing?
Very good.
Good. I have two questions, and number one is a question regarding the study, and I was wondering, did the author consider some aspect of cross-cultural communication? Because, last semester, we read a book on a book called The Spirit Catches You When You Fall Down, and this was a relationship between a doctor and, a Vietnam immigrant, and how, and how communication really didn't work out, and these kids end up suffering really bad. Mm-hmm. And my number two question is, with increasing immigrants in the country, mostly Hispanic, have the doctors in a way adjusted, or, due to the language barrier? Because I know this is a huge problem. And those are my two questions. I think I'll take my comments off there.
Thank you very much, Fidel. What about language barriers? Is that a part of this, Professor Wolf?
Very much so. That's an excellent point. So one of the other groups that is probably most hardest hit by the problem of health literacy is this group of individuals with limited English proficiency, or where English is not their first language. You find that there's a significantly higher rates of inadequate health literacy skills, where they have difficulty, basically a lot of information, unfortunately, is conveyed in English, and a lot of health information does not have translations available to it, or the translation is not good, or if you're seeing a physician who does not make it across that language barrier, then there's clearly some problems. That's hard to tease out a little bit, but it's an issue that is equally relevant, that you have to address it with health communication. For those who are that are dealing with both literacy and language barriers, how do you cross that chasm? And I think that's a separate issue to some degree, where there's a lot of new healthcare systems are now starting to take a look at that issue about how can they do what translation services do they have in place to communicate their information in multiple languages. So if you have a patient coming into a hospital that speaks Farsi, do you have somebody on staff, or what some recent programs have been available, and I know Walgreens is tapping into this, I believe, as well, that are using these phone systems where you have an operator or a person that is able to speak, a multitude of languages, not just one individual, but you have many operators that can handle different languages as patients come in. That still is being tested out to see if you can actually, have a decent medical encounter using a phone translation services, but that's a big problem. We have a lot of patients that don't speak English as their first language and are at risk for misunderstanding information and not being able to act accordingly.
Our guest is Michael Wolf. He is co-author of a recently published study that dealt with medical literacy or health literacy, and how not being able to read or fully comprehend your doctor's orders does shorten people's lives. The study found that people were 50% at 50% higher risk of dying if they couldn't understand this medical information. We'll talk more about how to improve the situation after the news. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine. It's 7:36 on this Wednesday morning, July the 25th. Do doctors and medical professionals use too much jargon as far as you're concerned? Too many highfalutin medical terms that you don't understand? Do you sometimes struggle with written medical care instructions? Do you ever get mixed up to what pill you're supposed to take when? Well, just imagine what it must be like for someone with low literacy skills or low reading skills or low health literacy skills. A new study from Northwestern University finds that older people with inadequate health literacy had a 50% higher mortality rate over 5 years than people who had adequate reading skills. Inadequate or low health literacy is defined as the inability to read and comprehend basic health-related materials such as prescription bottles, doctor appointment slips, and hospital forms. We're wondering what we ought to do about this. 1-800-642-1234. How do we better improve doctor-patient communication? How do we help all of us, for that matter, better understand medical instructions? 1-800-642-1234. In Madison, 263-1890. Our guest is Michael Wolff, assistant professor at the Institute for Healthcare Studies at Northwestern University, where he also directs the Health, Literacy, and Learning Program, co-author of this recent study on health literacy. And our next caller is Bill in Milwaukee. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi, Joy. My comment really has to do with strategies to deal with health literacy challenges. And one of the strategies that federally qualified health centers and others use is to really be intentional about hiring people from the community that's being served. Paraprofessionals like community health workers and nursing assistants can oftentimes be very good assistants in terms of helping to educate people about what the physician or the nurse practitioner might be saying. And coming from the community, they're more likely to pick up when the communication isn't currently getting through and trying to figure out how to make the communication much better.
Mm-hmm. Professor Wolff?
I think that is an incredibly important point, and there's a lot of support for that as well, to suggest that, you know, you need to be able to, that helping match patients with, you know, with staff that are in the community that understand some of the stressful social environments that you see in a lot of the individuals with lower literacy skills who may be coming from more socioeconomically disadvantaged communities that have access issues, and helping them understand, especially when you start thinking that it's not just helping them. I mean, not only can that help patients bridge the knowledge gap where they just need to have a better understanding of what is diabetes, for instance, and why do I have it and what do I need to do, but also understand some of the problems that they may face when they leave the doctor's office that are real imposed barriers. And I think that's a great idea.
Thank you very much, Bill, for the call. Maggie in Middleton is with us now. Hi, Maggie.
Good morning. I have a comment and then I have a question as well. The comment is that I know personally when I get a diagnosis and I'm sitting in a doctor's office, I'm a little upset, I'm a little scared, I'm not thinking really well. And if there is another person, if I bring someone with me or a personal advocate, someone who's got a more objective ear to listen well, I think it makes a big difference. Yeah. And I think that something like that might be useful, to ask patients to please bring a family member with them when they have a doctor's appointment, who they trust to come in and listen.
I always accompanied my parents on medical appointments, Professor Wolff. Is that a good idea?
Definitely. I mean, one of the issues, too, and it is a good point, because when you are, a lot of times health information, especially when you're in the context of your physician encounter, so you're in the doctor's office, a lot of times information is conveyed only in orally. The doctor is telling you, and a lot of times you don't get information written down at that encounter. You may get a prescription, but a lot of information is going through, and you may be thinking through, you may be getting good news, you may be getting bad news, but in either way, you may not be prepared to handle it, and a lot of information oftentimes gets conveyed, and it's pretty taxing on your memory. And so I think having somebody there as your surrogate, somewhat the listener that can maybe take notes, that's the other issue. If you don't have somebody available, if you have the ability to kind of jot down some notes, to bring a pad of paper in, or to even ask your doctor, if you can have some of that information written down. There's a lot of physicians that like to write information down as well. A colleague of mine who actually does a lot of research recently became a patient as well and was about to undergo surgery, and basically just said to her physician, look, I need you to write this information down. What is it that I have, and what is it that you're planning on doing about it? So there are some simple questions you should be always asking. Having somebody there to help you ask them if you're not able to or not in the mindset to do it is a great idea.
Yeah. Thank you very much, Maggie, for the call. Jim in Reedsburg is with us now. Hi, Jim.
Good morning. Morning.
Got a question for your guest. Though your results on your study appear interesting, it doesn't necessarily show cause and effect, and it may be just a coincidence that if you look at the set of people you studied, age 65 and up, by the time you go 6.5 years later, the younger members of the group are 72 years old, and the older ones may be 80. And if you look at the average life expectancy, is it something that we just merely stumbled on, that as people get closer to dying, they start losing cognitive abilities to read and comprehend? Their listening skills are going down, and it's not that because of that they die earlier. It's just that it's a mere coincidence of the way life works.
Well, that you raise a very interesting question that is kind of something that has been recently sparked in the field, and where we're trying to investigate this as well, as far as what is exactly we're measuring with our test of health literacy. Yes, it's very true that when we say, well, what is literacy to begin with? Well, literacy involves a lot of cognitive tasks. You have to remember information. You've got to navigate a lot of, you know, you've got some reasoning, some numeracy skills, your ability just to more than just, you know, reading what's on a page. And so knowing that with among older adults in particular that, yeah, the way life works, as you said, that, you know, we have a cognitive decline. You start seeing higher rates of dementia. But even in a non-clinical sense, you know, we all kind of start to slow down a little bit. Our minds don't work the way they once did when you get a little bit older. And so there is that. It's hard to tease it out. What we do think is somewhat intriguing is that, you know, even in other studies that have shown it with a larger range of age groups, that you still find significant differences in associations with various health outcomes, whether it be knowledge and understanding of a disease or actual self-management skills and the like, that you still see these findings. That's what's intriguing. And I do think you need to take this with a grain of salt, but I think that there is really convincing evidence that there is something going on here, that there does seem to be a group that we need to better understand who they are that seem to be at greater risk, although we don't know really why.
Yeah. I mean, in this particular study, you don't know that patient X, didn't take the prescription correctly because he or she couldn't understand it.
Not at all. Not at all. And you have to ask the bigger question. Is it really, you know, the term might be a little bit faulty to say health literacy. Well, you know, is it really just that the fact that you don't read as well as another individual, that your skills are a little bit lacking in reading, that would actually lead you to a greater mortality risk? It's likely that we're picking up something, that there's a skill set here. And it seems very plausible, though, that if you have a harder time getting information or recalling and retaining that information about your health care, about your disease, that it would cause problems in you being able to successfully manage the disease. And there are several studies that have shown that, for instance, among patients with diabetes, that you see patients with lower literacy skills had worse glycemic control, that they were less able to get a handle of their diabetes regimen. And we see the same thing with being able to understand and use medications in different contexts.
Yeah. Though you wouldn't dispute that the results, as I read here, show a dramatic need for healthcare providers to find better ways to educate low literacy patients about their health.
Not at all. I mean, I think the big issue in that, and again, this study is stacked on top of, you know, hundreds of other studies showing similar findings that ultimately get at this issue, not to point the finger at the patient to say, why aren't you doing a better job of getting involved in your healthcare, but rather to turn the cannon on the healthcare system itself and say, how are we actually getting patients information? Mm-hmm. It's kind of a mess when you really think about it. Everything from talking about prescription drugs to teaching patients about their disease, and or even telling them where to go for an appointment or a procedure. These are some basic things that we should be doing a much better job at doing.
Talking with Michael Wolff, an assistant professor at the Institute for Healthcare Studies at Northwestern University, about how we improve health literacy and how healthcare providers can find better ways to educate low literacy patients about their health, based on a study that shows low health literacy is dangerous to your health and, in fact, deadly. 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890. We have an open line for you if you have a thought or a question about this. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. You're listening to the Ideas Network. I'm Joy Cardine. 12 minutes before 8 o'clock, coming up after 8, we welcome in Matt Rothschild, editor of The Progressive Magazine and author of the new book, You Have No Rights, Stories of America in an Age of Repression. That's coming up in our next hour. Right now, we're talking about a study dealing with the medically illiterate or people with low health literacy skills and how they may be at greater risk of dying sooner, and talking about what we can do to improve health literacy and communication between doctors and patients. Our guest, Michael Wolff, assistant professor at the Institute for Healthcare Studies at Northwestern University. He co-authored a recently published study on health literacy, and he also directs the Health Literacy and Learning Program at Northwestern. And we welcome your thoughts and questions about this study and its implications and suggestions you might have on how it would how we could better improve the communication between doctors and patients and improve the understanding of patients of medical information. 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890. Professor Wolff, what are you currently doing at your health literacy and learning program? What are you doing to combat this problem?
Well, we have a few grants right now. I mean, part of it is just to better understand the issue a little bit more about who are the individuals who are at greatest risk, and if we can better get a grasp on what are the skills. So kind of deconstructing what are the health tasks that the healthcare system actually asks patients to engage in, whether it be for prevention, health promotion, communicating with your physician, to navigating a healthcare system, to when you leave your doctor's office, going home and managing a chronic disease. We're trying to look at those tasks and figuring out how we can better support patients in these endeavors. For the delivery of health information, one of the things we're working on right now are developing what we call these little multimedia programs mm-hmm. that would use plain language and kind of very concise, to-the-point messages. So sometimes we figure out what is the information you need to know to support your behavior. Do you need all of that pathophysiology to understand what diabetes is, or can you just have some very bulleted information and
did
layer
it? Did you
say
pathophysiology?
Yeah, there we go. Well, do you really need to understand everything mm-hmm. about diabetes? A lot of times physicians tend to maybe overshoot the mark, that they want to give you everything, all the information, when sometimes more is actually less, that you end up getting patients rolling their eyes back and just kind of nodding their head because they don't want their physician to think that they don't follow them, and then they leave the doctor's office completely overwhelmed and not really getting anything out of the encounter. So we're trying to help standardize that information transfer with these programs, with better materials that they can take home that are tangible, because even if you watch a video, sometimes you want something to go home and just in your own room, in your own living room or family room, to be able to read over, because again, as one of your callers pointed out, you're in a different state when you're in that doctor's office.
Christine in Mosinee is next. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi. My comment just refers to the previous caller, I believe it was, about the doctors having some responsibility in this, and especially now that you just said that about the literature, because my husband was diagnosed in December at a very well-known Central Wisconsin medical facility with myelodysplasia, which people know that it's a cancer of the bone marrow, but his doctor just stood at the end of the bed and told him, and it was the same doctor he had for 22 years, so it's not like he didn't know him. And anyway, we never got any literature. We never got anything until 2 weeks before he died in April. And this medical center touts itself on being patient-friendly, and I've written to them and expressed my concerns about the fact that it wouldn't have made any difference probably, but it surely would have helped us in dealing with the situation and in dealing with everything that was going on. And so I have to say, and we're not illiterate people. I took notes. He was in the hospital many times. I have booklets of notes from all those things. It just is that I think they bear some of the responsibility for this, of helping the patient through these difficult situations.
Yeah, instead of maybe just rattling off the stats, Michael Wolff.
You know, I think that's an incredibly important point to also make, that it's not just, you know, in general. This is a very, very you know, if you think of all of the day-to-day scenarios that you find yourself in, engaging with the healthcare system is one of the most complex, because it just has gotten that way. And we really do need the healthcare. We need providers and hospitals and everybody and healthcare professionals in general to really rethink how are we helping patients engage in their healthcare. We shouldn't be surprised when there's confusion or lack of action on the part of patients, when the reality is we're doing such a poor job of getting that information to them and getting letting them know what they should be doing and supporting that their decision making in the process of engaging in the healthcare system. And it's really gotten out of hand. There's a long story about this with in many contexts, whether it be looking at how we do a bad job talking about prescription drugs or even just giving information about a disease. And hopefully we're turning that around a bit.
Yeah. Christine, thank you very much for the call, and I'm so sorry for your loss. Laura Lynn in Menominee. Did I get your name correct? Laura Lynn?
Oh, it's pretty good. It's Lorellin.
Okay. Well, thank you for calling.
Oh, no problem. One of my concerns for that age group, the 65 and older, is the fact that they're not going to be advocating for themselves. Generally speaking, you get really kind of in the doctors get into the god-like type of thing, and the people in that category are not going to say, I'm just not understanding this, and you need to help me out.
Sure. I mean, I think that's a good point. I think there is definitely a generational difference when you have old, the way you expect, you know, your expectations of a medical encounter, how you're going to engage with your doctor is a lot of it. You know, are you a passive patient? Do you kind of take a subservient role that I sit back and whatever my doctor says I'll do, which we oftentimes hear from patients, especially older ones. And a lot of what we're trying to do is with improving patients' knowledge and understanding and how to get information is really to kind of empower them and activate them to take charge and to know you need to ask your doctor. Yeah, your doctor may try to rush through a lot of information, and we're working on that, but at the same time, we want you to understand that you have rights to get information, to slow them down, to ask certain, you know, and help them figure out what are the best questions to ask. That's an incredibly important point.
Yeah, we had a caller with a bad connection, Kay in Blue River, who is a public health nurse, who says that she sees many adults with undiagnosed reading problems who feel shameful about this and therefore don't admit it, that they can't read medical information. Points out that kids today have reading problems diagnosed, but the older generation hasn't had that.
That's true. Mm-hmm. There's a couple studies. We've done one as well that talk about this, especially since some people are even promoting using this as a, that because like with this study and among, on top of others, that there's so much evidence now that it's such a problem that should we be screening for it? I mean, there's actually people asking when you get your blood pressure and your pulse taken and your temperature, should you also be getting a literacy assessment? Mm-hmm. And there've been tools that have been developed for that. And there's lots of concerns of that even providing even more shame and stigma in that encounter. But yeah, a lot of people won't talk about it, and a lot of times physicians can't tell who can and cannot read because it's not that evident. It's not something you can see on someone's face, and these are not individuals who are completely illiterate or unintelligent. They're just there's many reasons why that has happened.
And Diane in Watertown, hi, you're on the air.
Good morning. Thank you for taking my call. This is an exciting program to listen to. I was a human resource director years ago in Boulder, Colorado, and we promoted a program called I'm in Charge and gave education to all 5,000 employees on questions to ask and exactly the issues you're talking about. Don't be passive. here are the questions to ask. We provided almost a checklist tablet to take to the doctor, take people with you. And I just see that these things have multiplied and increased, number one, with people living longer, so
Diane, thank you so much for bringing up that particular program. We have less than a minute to go, Michael Wolff. It sounds like a good program.
You know, I think, you know, a lot of your callers have brought up some really great points as far as addressing, whether it be to explaining this, but also addressing it. And there's a lot of, and this is a great time for us in the sense that, you know, I think there's a lot of recognition that this is a problem, but we're still trying to find a lot of solutions to help people really better navigate information. So there's a lot of learning to do.
Yeah, thank you very much for being with us.
No, I appreciate you having me.
Michael Wolff, assistant professor at the Institute for Healthcare Studies at Northwestern University, where he directs the Health Literacy and Learning Program, co-author of this just-published study on health literacy. Thanks to Leo Duran for producing the hour and Christina Taylor for on-air production. I'm Joy Cardine. You're listening to the Ideas Network.